My name is Frits van Evert. I work at Wageningen University and Research Center in Wageningen, the Netherlands. And I'm glad to be able to talk to you about in-season forecasting of potato yield today. The outline of my talk is I'll try to convince you that we need in-season yield forecasts. And I'll show you how we are proceeding with investigating which method is suitable for our goal. And I'll end up with some conclusions. This is a screenshot of our web-based portal that we're developing together with Agrifirm, which is a large farmers cooperative in the Netherlands, and other partners. And the tiles represent apps, just like on your tablet or your smartphone. There are some apps for uploading data. There are some apps for accessing data. And there are also apps for generating recommendations for pesticide or fertilizer application. And for these recommendations, we need to monitor crop growth, and in some cases, we need to forecast crop growth. So as in so many of these portals, also here, most data are related to geographic features. So for example, you can select a field, and you can indicate that you are growing potatoes on that field. And then you can pull up a satellite image, NDVI image here, feed that image into a application to generate a recommendation for a site-specific recommendation for, in this case, for an herbicide application. And then there's, of course, also an app where you can download a task map that you can download onto your fertilizer spreader or herbicide sprayer or whatever. So for potatoes, we're developing three applications: nitrogen side dress, Phytophthora control, and home killing. And home killing, in case you don't know it, is the practice to apply an herbicide at the end of the growing season, typically somewhere in August, to kill the vines and make harvesting possible. So in some years at that time, the crop is still very green, as shown in the picture on the right, and they need a lot of herbicide to kill it. At some times, it's already yellowing or maybe quite dead, and then you need significantly less herbicide. And now you can use crop reflectance to estimate the amount of herbicide needed to effectively kill the crop. And here, in this picture, in this graph, I'm showing you that we use crop scan reflectance measurement, but you can also use satellites or drones or any other measurement, any other platform that will give you a measurement of crop reflectance. Phytophthora, or late blight, is a fungus-like disease that can wipe out a potato crop. In the Netherlands, 10 or more applications of herbicide, fungicide are needed each season. And the trick here is to minimize the leaf area that has not yet been sprayed and is therefore susceptible to being infected. So when the crop is growing rapidly, you may need an application. The interval between successive applications may need to be as short as 3 or 4 days. But if the crop is growing less rapid, and especially if the weather conditions are not so favorable for the disease, then you may be may use an interval of 7 or 10 days. So here we need to monitor and to some extent predict crop growth over the next few days in order to generate an appropriate recommendation. And then finally, nitrogen side dress recommendations. Currently, most farmers, potato farmers in the Netherlands, apply all fertilizer at or just around planting. But our work has shown that it is almost always better to split the nitrogen dose, so that you can adjust the total amount of nitrogen applied to the conditions of the particular growing season. We use for that, our method is based on the idea of an optimal curve of crop nitrogen uptake, depicted here in green. And then if at any time during the growing season you find that your crop has taken up less nitrogen than is indicated, than the optimal curve, then you apply the difference as side dress, and that's an amount A in this picture. Now, that curve for optimal nitrogen uptake depends, of course, on the amount, on the yield that you are aiming for, which is dependent on cultivar, but it might also be dependent on your soil, on the growing conditions during the season. So if you find out that your yield is at most going to be significantly less than what you might expect, then in the same case, you might need a much smaller amount of nitrogen, citrus nitrogen, B. Or if you're heading for a bumper yield, then you might need a significantly more citrus nitrogen. So in order to give a proper recommendation for citrus nitrogen, we need to have a pretty good idea on what the yield is going to be. Of course, we cannot know that at the beginning of the season. We don't also don't need to know it at the beginning of the season. Somewhere halfway through the growing season is soon enough. So we are investigating how well can we estimate and what methods should we use to forecast yield. Now, we are investigating currently two methods, a statistics-based method and a crop modeling-based method. This was addressed in the previous talk a little bit also. Anyway, statistics is basically the baseline. It's what farmers doing now. You can expect a farmer to have a pretty good idea about what he or she can realize on their field, just based on experience. But a crop model uses detailed biophysical and physiological knowledge, so potentially it's more powerful than pure statistics. And we want to know if that, if we can realize that power. Now, we aim to provide recommendations for commercial growers, and so we need to be able that to, we need to be able to prove that our yield estimates of whatever method we're going to use is better than what's currently being used, which is then the baseline. And in, ideally, we also want to quantify how much better. So let's start by considering how good the predictive value of the baseline can be. This is just a small data set concerning potatoes grown commercially for seed potatoes. And it turns out that if we simply regress on grower and cultivar, you can explain quite a bit of the variation of the observed variation on already. And this is logical because different cultivars have different phenological development characteristics and therefore different yield potentials. And a grower, in this case, also is a proxy for soil, but certainly also for management ability. But that's just simply before the growing season. Let's see how far we can stretch that if we had much more information. Here, now we know, of course, that during the growing season, crop develops and intercepts light, and how the quicker it develops and the longer it stays green, you can expect higher yields. So on the top left-hand panel, I'm showing the duration, the relationship between duration, but from planting to killing, with measured yield. And on the bottom left panel, the relationship between average temperature during that growing period and measured yield. And you can see there is some information there. If you put all those things into a regression, you get actually a pretty good prediction of yield. Now this is, if you want to do this halfway through the season, you don't have all the information yet. However, you do know when your planting was, so that puts some bounds on the length of the growing period. You do know what the weather was in the first half of the growing season, so you know that puts some bounds on the temperature. So this might be better than what we can do in reality in a forecast mode, but it shows what which direction it goes. Baseline is pretty good. Now let's consider how good the predictive value of crop modeling can be. I simulated here yields for one of the cultivars in our data set, and the input to the model differed only with respect to planting date, the date of killing, and of course the weather for the various locations. And we did not use soil information here, which would be important for water, because seed potatoes are grown in the first part of the growing season, where water stress is not so very likely in the Netherlands, and besides, water stress did not occur in any of those years. So I'm plotting simulated yields here on the horizontal axis versus measured yields on the vertical axis, and you see that there's a pretty good correlation. Now again, I'm using here actual weather for the simulation, so this is not completely a forecast. This is more an indication of how well the model is able to reproduce the observed responses. The model picks up some of the variation in yield, but has a flatter response than reality, which is often the case when you have in a model and you have not completely included all the relevant processes. We know from earlier work that this is actually a very accurate model, but it needs to be parameterized properly. Here, for example, we used date of planting, and then took two weeks after that as the date of emergence, but in reality it might be from 2 to 4 weeks after planting, depending on the treatment of the seed, potatoes, temperatures of the soil, the, you know, a bunch of other conditions. So with better parameterization, we'd probably be able to do a better job of simulating yields. Anyway, all in all, I think that the model gives a signal that is useful for forecasting. Now, when we run a simulation model with actual weather for the entire period, we obtain something which I will call simulated yield. When you make a forecast, you do not have weather, realized weather, for the entire growing season. So you can simulate up to the point when you make the forecast and then continue from that point on 30 times with 30 different realizations of historical weather, and then you get not just one yield, you get 30 yields. And I will call the median of that distribution of yields the forecast yield. Now, when you make that forecast early in the growing season, we expect little or no correlation between forecast yield and simulated yield, as shown in the top left panel, which is for a forecast soon after planting. If you do that same thing 30 days later, the bottom left panel, then there's already a correlation, a bit of a correlation between forecast yield and simulated yield. And then on the right-hand panel, I summarize that information. I'm plotting the correlation coefficient between forecast and simulated yield as a function of the date of which the forecast is made. And you can see that you start out with very low correlation coefficients, but then halfway through the growing season, it starts to rise rapidly. And just about the time that that is the last time that we can apply CiTRES, about day 180, the end of June, we start to pick up a pretty good indication that of what the final yield is going to be. So remember, we're looking here at simulated yields only. A plot of forecast yields versus realized yields would show poor correlations. But I'm showing you this picture because I know that in my simulation, the model was not parameterized properly for these commercial fields. So our next step in this work will be to investigate whether we can use remotely sensed data and data assimilation, and perhaps over many years, to also pick up some plot information to calibrate the simulation model to each specific field and come up with better, more accurate forecasts. But in summary, I think I hope I've convinced you that statistics give a pretty good forecast of yield. That a simulation model that we're using, and in this case for potatoes and so on, has a ample explanatory power. I think forecasts using the simulation model can possibly be better than the statistics, but that depends entirely on whether we can parameterize that model for each specific location. And it's not yet clear whether we can do that on a commercial, large-scale situation. So with that, I would like to conclude, and maybe there's time for one or two questions. If I understood you well, the question is, can we use forecasts, longer-term weather forecasts to
seasonal forecasts?
And
I ask about, is the skill of the predictability coming from the measured weather already assimilated in your simulation? Because the rest of the growing system is climatology, and in 30 years measured.
Well, certainly, if we have good forecasts, we can use those. I am not aware how good our forecasts be, how good they will be. We are in a part of the world where weather systems change pretty quickly because of the location where we are, with on the one hand influences from the Atlantic Ocean and on the other hand influences from continental Europe. So that in a very short amount of time, the direction of the winds can change, and that will change the weather tremendously. So I am not so sure that seasonal forecasts are going to be terribly helpful. But this is something to look into, yes. And for the second part of your question, could you repeat that?
The predictability coming from the measured information invested in the up moment,
Yeah, how much of the predictability is coming from the first part of the season versus the second part of the season, if I may paraphrase it that way? I think in potatoes, it's about, well, as in many other crops, it's about having a green cover for assimilating, for intercepting radiation. So the first part of the season is important because it determines how quickly does the canopy develop and how quickly do you start intercepting radiation. As for this, so the observed part during the first part of the season will have a big influence on the accuracy of the forecast. The second part of the season, it's about keeping the canopy green and keeping it intercepting radiation. And that is not so much depending on the, well, to a certain extent, it's depending on the temperature, of course. But it's predicated for a large part on the treatment, on the temperature regime that the crop is experiencing in the first part of the season. So I think this is the reason why I expect that a crop modeling approach will be very able to pick up a lot of the information that happens during the beginning of the part of the season and has an influence on the final yield.
One quick question.
When you say parameterized for individual farmers' fields, you mean the crop part or the soil part?
I mean, both actually. The question is, if we parameterize for individual farmers' fields, do we do then crop parameters or soil parameters? I think both, because farmers typically know planting date, but it's hard to go out and record emergence date. But that's very important because it can vary by up to 2 weeks. Using a remote sensing approach, I think we can, I'm pretty sure we can pick up emergence.
So it's only emergence that you parameterize?
That would be the crop part. But I think there are also soil parameters that are hard to estimate, things related to water holding capacity and so on, as is expressed in crop growth. That's one way of observing that. And so with 1 year of simulating, 1 year of calibrating for a particular field, we cannot differentiate between crop parameters and soil parameters. If we have several or multiple years of remote sensing data from a crop, from a field, then we might be able to, maybe also from different crops, then we might be able to get a hold on some of the variability of soil parameters also. And so then we're moving in sort of a big data approach where we gather all the available information and try to use that to parameterize our